Welcome to City of Dreams, the finale. I'm Dylan Collins here with Malt. Hi, Malt.
Hi.
We're doing 2000s tonight.
We are.
We are. This week we had a twist, too. I don't know if you were around when the twist happened. But the first person to submit for each of the monologues got to pick the point value of the monologue. They just had to send in the point value they wanted it to be worth with their email. And if they were the first person to submit, the monologue was worth that many points. So each monologue tonight could be worth between 0 to 30 points.
Oh, my God.
I know. If you didn't include a point value with your monologue, it's automatically 0 points. Also, for the finale, this is really special, Malt.
Oh.
Every single monologue had somebody on it this week.
Ooh.
I know. And we had a drop. Blackjack dropped because he's a bitch. Oh. But I'm glad he dropped because he wasn't submitting hardly at all this season. Reed had to keep sending me his rough takes. So I'm glad he dropped because he's a bitch. All right, I feel better.
Oh.
2000. 0 points. Reed is on this one. He did not send me a point value. Therefore, it is worth 0 points, unfortunately. But the scores right now, Team Bollywood 62, Team Heaven Sucks 93, Team Utterly Absurd 225.5, and Team Oscar 134.5. Not to be a buzzkill, but I don't think any team can win except for Team Oscar could win if they somehow managed to win all their monologues and they were all like super high point values and Team Utterly Absurd got shut out. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know that Reed did not send me a point value, so his monologue is worth 0 points. So Team Oscar is one step closer to shutting them out.
Hmm.
I know. Let's see. It might have been strategy, though. Reed might have assumed that more people would do that monologue, and then he was going to make it 0, so whoever won it didn't get any points. I don't know what the strategy was, but it is High Fidelity 2000 screenwriters D.V. DeVincentis, Steve Pink, John Cusack, and Scott Rosenberg. I didn't know John Cusack wrote this. Co-wrote it. The all-time five most painful breakups in the film's opening after the credits, when his girlfriend Laura had just broken up with him and had left his Chicago apartment. Record store owner and audiophile Rob Gordon compiled a list of his top five all-time Desert Island most memorable breakups to try to figure out what went wrong. Seen with flashbacks during his junior high, high school, and college days throughout much of the film. So, let's listen to Reed to Me.
All right.
My Desert Island's all-time top five most memorable breakups in chronological order are as follows. Allison Ashmore, Penny Hardwick, Jackie Alden, Charlie Nicholson, and Sarah Kendrew. These were the ones that really hurt. Can you see a name on that list, Laura? Maybe you'd sneak into the top 10, but there's just no room for you in the top 5. Sorry. Those places are reserved for the kind of humiliation and heartbreak you're just not capable of delivering. If you really wanted to mess me up, you should have got to me earlier. Which brings us to number 1 on the top 5 all-time breakup list. Allison Ashmore. One moment, they weren't there. Not in any form that it interests us anyway. And then the next, you couldn't miss them. They were everywhere. And they'd grown breasts. And we wanted... Actually, we didn't even know what we wanted. But it was something interesting. Disturbing, even. My relationship with Allison Ashmore lasted for 6 hours. The 2 hours after school before the Rockford Files for 3 days in a row. But on the fourth afternoon, Kevin Bannister... You know, it would be nice to think that since I was 14, times have changed. Relationships have become more sophisticated, females less cruel, skin thicker, instincts more developed. But there seems to be an element of that afternoon in everything that's happened to me since. All my romantic stories are a scrambled version of that first one. Number 2 on the top 5 all-time breakup list was Penny Hardwick. Penny was great looking. And her top 5 recording artists were Carly Simon, Carole King, James Taylor, Cat Stevens, and Elton John. She was nice. Nice manners, nice grades, nice looking. She was so nice, in fact, that she wouldn't let me put my hands underneath her, even on top of her bra. Attack and defense, invasion and repulsion. It was as if breasts were little pieces of property that had been unlawfully annexed by the opposite sex. They were rightfully ours, and we wanted them back. Sometimes I got so bored of trying to touch her breasts that I would try to touch her between her legs. It was like trying to borrow a dollar, getting turned down, and then asking for 50 grand instead. I wasn't interested in Benny's nice qualities, just breasts. And therefore, she was no good to me. I started dating a girl who everyone said would give it up, and who didn't. And Penny went with this asshole named Chris Thompson, who told me that he had sex with her after something like 3 dates. Number 3 in the top 5 all-time breakup list, Charlie Nicholson, sophomore year of college. Oh, as soon as I saw her, I realized she was the kind of girl I'd wanted to meet ever since I was old enough to want to meet girls. I mean, she was different. She was dramatic, and she was exotic, and she talked a lot, and when she talked, she said remarkably interesting things about music, books, films, politics, and she talked a lot, and she liked me. She liked me. She liked me. At least I think she did. We went out for 2 years, and I never got comfortable. Why would a girl... No. A woman like Charlie go out with me? I felt like a fraud. I felt like one of those people who suddenly shaved their heads and said they'd always been punks. I was sure I'd be discovered at any second, and I worried about my abilities as a lover. And I was intimidated by other men in her design department, and I became convinced she was going to leave me for one of them. And then she left me for one of them. The dreaded Marco. And I lost it. Kind of lost it all. Faith, dignity, about 15 pounds. When I came to a few months later, I found to my surprise I'd flunked out of school. So started working at a record shop. Some people never get over Nam or the night their band opened for Nirvana. I guess I never really got over Charlie. But the thing I learned from the whole Charlie debacle, you gotta punch your weight. You see, Charlie, she's out of my class. She's too pretty, too smart, too witty, too much. I mean, what am I? I'm a middleweight. Hey, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I'm certainly not the dumbest. I mean, I've read books like Unbearable Lightness of Being and Love in the Time of Cholera. And I think I've understood them. They're about girls, right? Just kidding. Anyway, me and Charlie, we didn't match. Marco and Charlie, yeah, they matched. But me and Sarah, number 4 on the all-time list... We matched. She'd just been dumped by some asshole named Michael, and I'd just been run over by Charlie. It made sense to pool our collective loathing for the opposite sex, and while we're at it, we get to share a bed with somebody at the same time. We were frightened of being left alone for the rest of our lives. Only people of a certain disposition are frightened of being left alone for the rest of their lives at 26. Well, we were of that disposition. So when she told me I met someone else, it was contrary to the whole spirit of our arrangement. So how come I got dumped? For a couple of years, I was DJ at a club. I was good at it, I think. And while I was doing it, it was the happiest I've ever been. And that's where I met Laura. She was already a lawyer, but she worked for Legal Aid, hence the leather jacket and clubbing. Oh, I liked her right away. To be honest, I hadn't met anyone as promising as Laura since I started DJing. And meeting promising women is kind of what the DJing thing is supposed to be about. And anyway, we moved on from there. She lost her lease in her apartment in Lakeview, and she moved in with me. And it stayed that way for years. She didn't make me miserable, or anxious, or ill at ease. And you know, it sounds boring, but it wasn't. It wasn't spectacular, either. It was just... good. But really good. So how come I'm suddenly an asshole? One. That I slept with someone else while she, Laura, was pregnant. 2, that my affair directly contributed. 3, that after the abortion, I borrowed a large sum of money from her and have not as yet repaid any of it. 4, that shortly before she left me, I told her that I was kind of unhappy in the relationship and maybe sort of looking around for someone else. Oh, God. Did I do and say those things? Oh, yes, I did. I'm a fucking asshole. Well, that pretty much brings us up to date. What's wrong with me? Serious, what's happened? Why am I doomed to be left, doomed to be rejected? I need answers. Oh, number 5, Jackie Alden. Jackie Alden's breakup had actually no effect on my life whatsoever. It was a casual thing, and I was kind of glad when it ended. I just slotted her in to bump Laura out of position. But now, congratulations, Laura. You made it to the top 5. Number 5 with a bullet. Welcome.
That was Read to Me on High Fidelity. He didn't put anything in his email, so it is worth 0 points. I'm sorry, Reed. Okay. 2001, 30 points. Jinxers is first on this one. He made it worth 30 points. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. You want to set it up?
Sure.
Do it.
Let me do my first messy setup of the night.
Aw, shit.
All right. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, 2001. Screenwriter Steve Kloves. The I can tell you how to bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death. Devious Professor Devious Professor Severus Snape, that is definitely a tongue twister, played by Alan Rickman, during his first potions class, ominously instructed his Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry students. He picked Oh my god, I'm just not able to read this.
I believe in you, Moth. I believe in you.
He picked on the boy who lived, Harry Potter, played by Daniel Radcliffe, calling him our new celebrity, and then provokingly questioned him to embarrass and belittle him.
All right, let's hear Jinxers as Snape.
Ooh.
There will be no foolish wand waving or silly incantations in this class. As such, I don't expect many of you to appreciate the subtle science and exact art that is potion making. However, for those select few who possess the predisposition, I can teach you how to bewitch the mind and ensnare the senses. I can tell you how to bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death. Then again, maybe some of you have come to Hogwarts in possession of abilities so formidable that you feel confident enough to not pay attention. Mr. Potter, our new celebrity. Tell me, what would I get if I added powdered root of asphodel to an infusion of wormwood? You don't know. Let's try again. Where, Mr. Potter, would you look if I asked you to find me a bezoar? And what is the difference between monkshood and wolfsbane? Pity. Clearly fame isn't everything, is it, Mr. Potter?
Next up, Sundance Girl.
There will be no foolish wand waving or silly incantations in this class. As such, I don't expect many of you to appreciate the subtle science and exact art that is potion making. However, for those select few who possess the predisposition, I can teach you how to bewitch the mind and ensnare the senses. I can tell you how to bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death. Then again, maybe some of you have come to Hogwarts in possession of abilities so formidable that you feel confident enough to not pay attention. Mr. Potter, our new celebrity. Tell me, what would I get if I added powdered root of asphodel to an infusion of wormwood? You don't know? Well, let's try again. Where, Mr. Potter, would you look if I asked you to find me a bezoar? And what is the difference between monkswood and wolfsbane? Pity. Clearly, fame isn't everything, is it, Mr. Potter?
And Axelden also on the monologue.
There will be no foolish wand-waving or silly incantations in this class. As such, I don't expect many of you to appreciate the subtle science and exact art that is potion-making. However, for those select few who possess the predisposition, I can teach you how to bewitch the mind and ensnare the senses. I can tell you how to bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death. Then again, maybe some of you have come to Hogwarts in possession of abilities so formidable that you feel confident enough to not pay attention. Mr. Potter, our new celebrity, tell me, what would I get if I added powdered root of asphodel to an infusion of wormwood? You don't know? Well, let's try again. Where, Mr. Potter, would you look if I asked you to find me a bezoar? And what is the difference between monkshood and wolfsbane? Pity. Clearly, fame isn't everything, is it, Mr. Potter?
All right, that was the Harry Potter monologue. This one's worth 30 points.
Whoa!
I know. Let's start with Jinxers. You start with Jinxers first.
All right. All right, the biggest thing that sort of stuck out to me was, like, you sounded a bit bored. And I know, like, Snape's, like, sort of a monotonous kind of character, so maybe that's why. But I don't know, that kind of just stuck out to me, and it made it, like, a little hard to, like, hear the monologue instead of just hearing the drawl of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was I thought that the echo that you had in there was interesting. I don't know if that was because of your mic or not, but it kind of made it seem like you were down there in the dungeons in the potions room, and that to me was, like, really kind of cool, and I liked that. But yeah, like, I think you tried you did well in keeping the voice and, like, giving it character. But, like, yeah, like I was saying, the only thing I really have a problem with is that it sounded bored.
I really liked yours. I thought you did an amazing job with it. You sounded like a condescending professor. I thought you did a great job with it. It was one of my favorite monologues from you, actually, I think. So, kudos, Jinxers. Let's move on to Sundance Girl. Sundance Girl. I loved yours, too. You were very dry and angry-sounding. I got, like, the condescending thing from you. I also thought you did an amazing job with it. What did you think about Sundance Girl?
I agree. Like, I think that she did a very good job with it. Once again, I feel like I think it might have just been, you know, people trying to be Snape-y. But, like, once again, it sounded a bit bored to me. But you did have energy. And sorry, trying to, like, actually read my notes. My notes are so weird. For some reason I started doing this like 2 weeks ago or something, but I did the little takeout lines that I really liked. I liked the line, "our new celebrity" and "you don't know." I really liked those. That made me go, So good job, Sundance Girl.
And Axelden, you start on Axelden.
Okay. Axel, you have, some of your inflections were, like, a little strange. Like, I don't know why you went up at some points. But, Axel, I think this was your best monologue. Like, I really actually enjoyed it. I really liked the way that you said, ensnare the senses. And I think you were the only one that didn't try for, like, the British accent too much. And I'm actually kind of happy with that because I wanted to see what it would sound like. And I think that you did a very good job, Axel. So, great job.
Yeah, I think you're a good actor, and I feel like maybe what I said was misinterpreted a little bit last week. I want everyone on VH to improve, and sometimes I push people. Maybe I pushed you a little too hard last week, but I apologize for that if you felt I was too harsh on you last week. But I was trying to get through to you, and now that said, I do think this was a big improvement on last week. I feel like for the finale, you brought it. I feel like this was your best monologue of the season. And I can tell you went for a voice on this, and you went for a character, and you stayed in your character the whole time. You didn't waver from it, so I thought you did a good job on it. So, good job, Axelden. Did you pick a winner?
I think I did.
I think I did, too. I did. It was close for me, but I ended up going with Jinxers. What about you?
It was actually a three-way tie for me, and I had to think about
it. Holy
shit. Yeah, it was. It was a three-way tie, but... I'm going to go with Sundance Girl because one of my notes is Sundance, you give me the ooms.
Okay. So Team Heaven Sucks gets 15 points. That's 108. I was counting. And Team Oscar also gets 15 points. That is 149.5.
Hello.
Congratulations to both of you, and good job, Axelden. That was your best monologue, and I think it was a finale-level performance from you, so kudos. Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers is up next.
Ooh.
I know. We actually only have one person on this one, and it is Jeffers! He made this one worth 20 points. Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, 2002, screenwriters Fran Walsh, Philippa Boyens, Stephen Sinclair, and Peter Jackson. There's some good in this world, and it's worth fighting for on a quest to destroy the One Ring at Mordor with Hobbit Frodo Baggins, who was ready to give up. His loyal companion Samwise Gamgee reflected on how... reflected on how their story might have a happy ending, even though they had already faced so much adversity. He insisted that they must continue and hold on to what they were fighting for. Let's listen to Jeffers!
I know. It's so wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here. But we are. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo. The ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger, they were. And sometimes, you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end... it was only a passing thing, a shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it'll shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you. That meant something. Even if you were too small to understand why. And I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folks in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going because they were holding on to something. That there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for.
That was Jeffers.
He
made this monologue worth 20 points. Nobody else did it, so Team Heaven Sucks gets 20 points. So they're at 128.
Nice.
Yeah. 2003, there was more than one person on this monologue.
Ooh.
It's Finding Nemo. We have Melly and Janie on this monologue. Melly made it worth 30 points.
Nice.
One of them made it worth 30 points. I don't remember which. I'm going to go check, though. For the sake of knowing. Let's see. Is this riveting audio? I was looking for my mixtape folder, which is not the show we're doing right now, so whatever. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, Melly was first on this, and she made it 30 points. Booyah, she said. So, Melly versus Janie Girlie 07 on Finding Nemo. Do you want to set the scene?
Sure.
Do it.
All right. Screenwriters and stuff, too? I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Finding Nemo, 2003. Screenwriters, Andrew Stanton, Bob Peterson, and David Reynolds. Please don't go away. Right. Forgetful blue surgeonfish Dory, the voice of Ellen DeGeneres, begged not to be left by despairing clownfish Marlin, voice of Albert Brooks, from the Great Barrier Reef, who was giving up the search for his abducted son Nemo, voice of Alexander Gold, in Sydney, Australia. Marlin feared that they were too late in rescuing Nemo, and he was returning home.
All right. Let's listen to Melly.
Ooh. No. No, you can't. Stop! Please don't go away. Please. No one's ever stuck with me so long before, and if you leave... If you leave... I remember things better with you. I do. Look, P. Sherman, 42... P. Sherman, 42... P. Sherman, 42... I remember it. I do. It's there. I know it is because when I look at you, I feel it. And when I look at you, I'm home. I don't want that to go away. I don't want to forget.
Janie Girlie 07, take it away.
No. No, you can't! Stop! Please don't go away! Please? No one's ever stuck with me for so long before. And if you leave... If you leave, I remember things better with you. I do. Look. P. Sherman, 42. Oh, I remember it. I do. It's there. I know it's because when I look at you, I can feel it. And I look at you, and I'm home. Please. I don't want that to go away. I don't want to forget.
All right, that was the Finding Nemo monologue. I love both of these, Amala. Both of these did a great job.
Yeah, they really did.
Let's start with Melly. Melly, I liked all the extra things you added in yours. I liked the P. Sherman part. I liked... You had, like, different levels you put in this. There was whispering, there was wavering voices. You did a lot in the short monologue, so I thought it was a really good performance from you. What did you think about Melly?
I agree. I think that she did very well. It gave me goosebumps. It was emotional, it was sad, and I think that you had the sort of, like, floundering kind of feel that Dory has, like, how she's not able to really grasp her words.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you did very well with it.
What did you think of Janie Girlie 07?
Once again, it was really, really good. You, like, Janie, you have so much emotion in your voice, and, like, it always astounds me how well you do with it. Like, it was, like, in a way, completely different from Melly's. And, like, at the same time, it still fit it so well. So, like, I'm having, like, a really difficult time here. Because you both did really well.
Yeah, I loved yours as well, Janie. I'm a huge fan of yours, both acting and singing. For me, the difference was I felt that... Have you made your decision yet? Because I don't want to...
I did. Okay. It was really hard, but I did make my decision.
For me, the difference was... Janie, I thought you did a really good job with yours, and you read the monologue really well, but I felt that Melly sort of built more of a well-rounded character in her. She did a lot more in her monologue. Both of them were extremely well-read. I love both of them, but I gave it to Melly because I thought she did a little bit more with it. Who did you pick?
I also picked Melly only because while, like, she was a little more, like, while, like, for all the reasons you said, and then because I feel like Janie's was a bit jumbled.
I could see that. I thought the jumbledness kind of worked for the character, for me personally.
Yeah. No, I don't know, but, like, it was such a hard decision to make that I had to start nitpicking.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, so. I want to stress you guys both did an amazing job. In fact, everybody that has been on the same monologue, multiple people, I thought everybody has brought it. Like, they've been both been really hard to decide. Team Oscar now at 179.5. We are now moving on to, let's see, 2004, JC is on this, he made it worth 15 points, Kill Bill Volume 2,
ooh.
Screenwriter Quentin Tarantino, you're a renegade killer bee, musings about superheroes, there was a final confrontation showdown between revenge-seeking assassinatrix bride, and aka Beatrix Kiddo, and Bill, her former boss, lover, and father of her 4-year-old daughter, Bibi. He shot her in the leg with truth serum, then he unhurriedly mused about comparisons between Superman and Spider-Man. He expressed his admiration for her as one of his natural-born killers. Please stop typing when I'm reading!
Sorry.
As a member of his deadly Viper assassination squad before she had deserted him and chose to secretly take her unborn baby away from him. That's fine. You can mute. That's better. JC is on this for 15 points. Go for it, JC. I don't know where I started to say go and I didn't know where I was going with it, but take it away.
As you know, I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating. Take my favorite superhero, Superman. Not a great comic book. Not particularly well drawn. But the mythology. The mythology is not only great, it's unique. Now, a staple of the superhero mythology is there's the superhero, and there's the alter ego. Batman is actually Bruce Wayne. Spider-Man is actually Peter Parker. When that character wakes up in the morning, he's Peter Parker. He has to put on a costume to become Spider-Man, and it is in that characteristic Superman stands alone. Superman didn't become Superman. Superman was born Superman. When Superman wakes up in the morning, he's Superman. His alter ego is Clark Kent. His outfit with the big red S, that's the blanket he was wrapped in as a baby when the Kents found him. Those are his clothes. What Kent wears, the glasses, the business suit, that's the costume. That's the costume Superman wears to blend in with us. Clark Kent is how Superman views us. And what are the characteristics of Clark Kent? He's weak. He's unsure of himself. He's a coward. Clark Kent is Superman's critique on the whole human race. Sort of like Beatrix Kiddo and Mrs. Tommy Plimpton? You would have worn the costume of Arlene Plimpton. But you were born Beatrix Kiddo. And every morning when you woke up, you'd still be Beatrix Kiddo. I'm calling you a killer. A natural-born killer. You always have been, and you always will be. Moving to El Paso. Working in a used record store. Going to the movies with Tommy. Clipping coupons. That's you. Trying to disguise yourself as a worker bee. That's you trying to blend in with the hive. But you're not a worker bee. You're a renegade killer bee. And no matter how much beer you drank, or barbecue you ate, or how fat your ass got, nothing in the world would ever change that.
That was Genesis. When we come back in part two, we're going to hear Russ on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He chose to make this 23 points. He's the only person on the monologue. So he gets 23 points, including JC's score. The total score for Team Utterly Absurd right now is 263.5. Team Bollywood 62, Team Oscar 179.5, and Team Heaven Sucks 128. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Russ.